It's just past 18 hours, 33 minutes and 48 seconds East African time. Time for John Sibi Okumu on Wednesday. This being Wednesday, the 26th of April, 2023. Hamjambo na karibuni. Hello and welcome. Well, good people, in this edition, after that upbeat greeting, I'm going to paint some rather downbeat scenarios on the subject of health care. One, a dear one falls ill. A WhatsApp group is rapidly formed to raise funds to send the sick person to India, for example, for treatment, with a happy or sad ending, but definitely at a cheaper price than staying at home. Two, a woman is obliged to give birth on a hospital floor because there aren't enough beds at the hospital. And three, a person goes to a rural dispensary only to find that there is no medicine available for her or his condition. Always remembering that our founding father, Jomo Kenyatta, loftily announced that after independence in 1963, a war would be waged against ignorance, poverty, and, of the essence, disease. What has happened since in the healthcare sector? Our mystery guest, although not a medical doctor nor a government legislator, has spent years involved with matters of health and can give some insights drawn from personal experience. Let's hear some sample answers to the question, what would be your first action once you realize that you were seriously ill? Ni uamuzi gani utakao chukua ukigundua umgonjwa sana?
Kweli sijui hata wanaweza anzia wapi. Aieleweki.
Watu wetu wengi mapato ni kidogo. Mtu kumwambia atoe shilingi 500 na hajagonjeka, anasema acha niweke pesa paka siku nitagonjeka alafu nitaenda hospitali.
My first action, I'll just go to God and pray, for I know not what to do.
So affordability kwa hii community ya treatment is somehow a challenge.
I would honestly go into shock, given that healthcare in Kenya right now is quite expensive.
Sasa ni mimi mwenyewe nitilinde.
The treatment is expensive, and also in Kenya we don't have enough facilities. I think that may bring some kind of a challenge.
My fellow Kenyan, what say you to that?
Good evening. I have listened to these sentiments by our fellow Kenyans, and I look at it and say we are not in a good place. We aren't in a good place where the first thing we think about money. We don't even know which hospital to go to. We don't even know where to run to. The first thing is set up WhatsApp groups to get money. I think we need to do something about it.
Okay, but let's go back very slowly. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you a little story. When I was a young lad, my response to illness in general is that I remember my mother on occasion, although she was a believer and a Christian, she still saw it fit to take me every once in a while to the Mganga, and he would spray me with sort of miracle concoctions that would cure me of every disease. And when I went to school, there could be evil spirits that lurked therein. And she would sew some sort of medicine to my belt to make sure, my clothes, so that to make sure that I would ward off the evil spirits of those who wished to destroy me, because I was her only son. I was the son and heir, the firstborn child, and there were nasty people out to get me. As for my family in general, there was the idea of prayer. You could pray for illness to go away. But as we became, quote-unquote, more civilized, the idea was to, the hospital became the symbol of healthcare. You went to a hospital, and those who could can. But as you can see, there's still shades of the prayer and the uganga in people sort of persuading people to starve themselves to death. So so I'm being rather topical. What's your response to that? Or how does that, what are you going to criticize that's happening in our minds, that there can be a certain gentleman who persuades people to kill themselves in the name of God?
As you've well put it, we've come from far and we are still very far away from reaching where we need to be. I'm not so sure that as you've said, the President Jomo Kenyatta said, we are waging war against ignorance, poverty, and disease. Ignorance is what is still ailing our society. Yes, we have grown up, we know how to read, we know how to write, we have graduates and all that, but ignorance is one of the things that is ailing us. And we look at the health system in itself. Are we giving hope to our people? People turn to what gives them more hope. So the place that seems to, you will get more answers from, you'll get solutions from, therefore might go into places such as where people go for prayers. So there is more hope in the prayers than would be going into a healthcare system that we have within our country.
Well, let's go back with another story. I think that in this conversation we'll get bogged down if we go into statistics of the nature of, you know, yesterday was World Malaria Day, and if we say every minute a child dies of malaria, there are those statistics that are gruesome in themselves. You, as a health practitioner, mm-hmm. are dealing with real sick people. Yes. And I'd like to be focused on their experience. As we said in talking to the one Ainchi on the street, we said, what would you do if you were told that you had this terrible disease or illness? What does our country have to offer you? And another anecdote, fellow Kenyan, we remember, in my day, we all went to Kingi Joji. Twende Kingi Joji. That Kingi Joji, I think after George V, was the name that before independence was given to what is now Kenyatta Hospital. Now look at that very organized institution, nice buildings of what it looked like in those days, and then the degeneration to the point where today you might end up on the floor. So I know that you yourself are in the private sector. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. Comment on what has happened in the last 60 years. Because you must have gone into healthcare because you thought it was a service tradition. You wanted to do something for people.
Yes.
So comment.
So when you mention institutions such as Kenyatta National Hospital, which was called St. George, 1953, we had a beautiful...
King George.
King George. Mm-hmm. We had a beautiful institution in 1952, well thought out, with training facilities. We had the doctor's quarters just next there. We had a mortuary, city mortuary, just next door. We had laboratories. We had a research institution, the University of Nairobi, established within it. We were training nurses, Kenya Medical Training College, within the same facility. This was all-encompassing by the time we were getting to independence in 1963, when the name changed now to Kenyatta National Hospital. But what do we have right now? Right now, we rarely have institutions that are built to this extent. We don't have the training colleges, the research facilities within these hospitals. Look at just the external outlook of Kenyatta National Hospital. What can compare to that today? And this is an institution that was built in 1952. It started in 1901, but now by the time it was King George in 1952, all this setup had already come up. It means that at that point, we were, according to me, way ahead than we are right now in 2023. We had the doctors in place. We had training ongoing there. There were nothing like doctor strikes, nurses strikes. There wasn't that. Systems were actually working for the few millions that were in Nairobi at that point. This was the hugest referral institution in East and Central Africa. What is Kenyatta now? Where are we? Now, you'd find that to address these challenges that are happening within our system, private people have come up. And the private people are these doctors and nurses who have been frustrated probably by the system. So you try to provide the best medical care within your means. And therefore you find bigger hospitals that have come next to our main referral hospitals. I look at it and say that the systemic breakdown that has occurred is something that we need to look at. Have we managed our policies well? Kenya is one of the people or of the countries with the best healthcare policies. We have brains, but the brain drain is also crazy.
Well, I always have some pause when somebody who is actually a practitioner is enumerating all the things that are wrong with the system as though they themselves were incapable of being part of providing a solution. So, for example, if we continue our this conversation in this vein, we're going to come to some kind of traffic jam or something and be unable to move forward. I would still draw you on your experience. There was the gentleman who said that it's better to save 500 shillings a month on the expectation that I might be ill one day rather than pay 500 shillings to the NHIF. Now, if we read our papers, fellow Kenyan, we already know of a move afoot to engage the Mwananchi in paying according to their earnings for the NHIF. So again, as a practitioner, that was your title, is this the way forward? Now, I know that there's a problem. Even in the UK, they've got their, whatever, the National Health Service is not working. Mm-hmm. But is that a reason for us to say that ours shouldn't work either?
No, I don't think so. I'll just say that you must remember the government or our system, the way we create it, is the one that that supports all these functions, and the functions include, as per, for example, our constitution, it says that we have the right to highest attainable standard of health. However, as a doctor, as a nurse, if all these tools to provide this highest attainable standard are not availed, how are we supposed to get this healthcare to this person?
Right, we'll take a break and I'll come back to you with a few more questions of my own. Capital FM. My fellow Kenyan, I believe that healthcare is the only fully devolved function under the new constitution, meaning that each county has to take care of its own health. Now, comment on that before I ask you a question. Is that a great leap forward that we're leaving people to themselves when there are so many disparities between certain regions of our country?
My opinion is that I think devolved healthcare is something that is good. Good in the sense that every county knows what ails them. They will know where to put their resources on. If there's a section of the country in Western Kenya, there's malaria, you'll put your funding in malaria. You'll go to another part of the country, it's probably nutrition. So you will manage your own county much better than you do it at government level. I look at other things that have devolved. You find that quite a number of towns and cities have really come up as a result of the devolved government that has occurred in the last 13 years. But the question would be, has health really fully devolved? And are we there? Are we going somewhere? Or should it come back to the central government, like many of the providers are pushing for?
But again, the devolved government as a cash cow for corruption. Get rich quick, because you've got all this money to spend, and instead of buying medicines, just give it to yourself and your chums.
I wouldn't comment on that really, because I'm not sure whether this money actually goes to people's pockets or to the functions, or the money is too little to go into these functions. But I'll comment on in terms of health. At the county levels, we have different levels. We have a level one, which is the community, where we have people called community health workers who are supposed to be supported. In the current government, I've overheard in the news that they should be paying these community health workers, who are people who are originally not being paid. Then we go to, these ones look at the public health issues, preventive medicine. Then we go to level two facilities that should be run by probably nurses or clinical officers. Do we have the staff? Do we have the equipment? Can we conduct a delivery in these small facilities? Level two is a health center and dispensaries. We go to level three, which are sub-county hospitals. Sub-county hospitals now have medical officers. We have some kind of specialized care where you're probably going to do some surgeries here and there, management of a few diseases that are more complex. We go down to level four and level five, where we are now going to more specialist services, where we are going to find specialists, obstetricians, orthopedic surgeons, and all that. Do we have the infrastructure for that? Do we have these doctors? Or have they left the country? Or are they now working in the private hospitals? So the question is this: have the devolved government was well thought out in terms of health? But are we oiling it so that it can function and function well?
May I ask you if you know how many doctors and nurses, to come to that, we have in the country? Are there enough to go around?
No, the doctors have never been enough, not in Kenya. They have never been enough.
So are you aware whether we have a policy that says, you know, the way, you know, the Chinese, for example, are meant to think like 50 years ahead, and they'll say, you know, 50 years from now, we'd have built a road from Beijing to Vladivostok and across to Europe. Will there ever be a day when we produce enough doctors and nurses at the current scale? Or you wouldn't know the answer to that question.
I think we are producing doctors and nurses and other healthcare practitioners. The question is, are we retaining them within our system, or we are looking for greener pastures? I'd rather go to Europe, USA, or private facilities than work within the government where I'm frustrated.
Okay, but mm-hmm. I mean, as a practitioner, do you think about the idea of, for example, to keep very qualified doctors working in, let us say, a dangerous area where there's sort of activity, banditry? Would you expect a young man to go and, or a young woman to go and give treatment there at the risk of being blown up on their way home for Christmas holiday? shouldn't they be paid much more to make it attractive? For example, in America, I believe, if you operate in Alaska at sub-zero temperatures, you get paid more money than working in New York. So there is legislation to deal with the problem.
Yes.
I'm just saying, are you as practitioners aware of the problem? Because I'm asking these questions as a result of research. I know nothing about your, yes. But I can read.
But when we are talking about devolving health, I think this was where this was supposed to be addressed, because we have unique circumstances in different counties. So if this county knows that we have bandits in this county, of course, you need to say how are you going to retain your healthcare workers within this county It means, is it going to, are you going to give them house allowances? Are you going to give them risk allowances and all that? Therefore, it is specific for the specific county. And well, let's say you come to Nairobi County, for example. We're not going to give money aside for banditry, but there's something else. There'll be house allowance that will be needed. Have you provided houses for them around the hospital so that you don't drive from Rongai to town for an emergency cesarean section, which should be happening within 15 minutes?
We've just gone through the COVID crisis, to put it euphemistically.
Okay.
And there we have this institution, KEMSA, which is responsible to giving out drugs, not only to private, but to public hospitals, to pharmacists. The drugs come via through KEMSA. But there is, on record, for those who dare to keep up with the news, the idea that we had all this medicine ready to deal with COVID, and it's now rotting in some sort of store, unused, and people haven't been taking the jabs. So again, I just want you to comment, because I said you as a practitioner would speak from personal experience. Is this an indication of a great leap forward in terms of management?
Talking about KEMSA, which is a drug agency or procures drugs on behalf, but it procures drugs on behalf of government facilities, so I wouldn't have a really concrete evidence on what is happening. But we are talking about KEMSA, where it is the one that will buy drugs and distribute to government facilities. The question is, are our systems in place? Do we know minimum stocks, maximum stocks, so that we don't take malaria drugs to Nairobi, all of them, and we don't have malaria cases in Nairobi? So these are some of the areas that we have expertise, but are we using this expertise to actually work this this thing out?
You introduce a wonderful prong there, which is that there are two divides here.
Yes.
There is the public versus private healthcare.
Yes.
And there is the divide between the urban and the rural, the town and the village.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a practitioner, may I ask you a personal question?
Yes.
Would, I know you operate from Nairobi.
Mm-hmm.
Would you dare do what you do if you went to sort of, you know, Pokot West?
No.
Not that I've got anything against Pokot West, but it is a far-flung area of our country.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that as a private.
Sorry, let me put that question again.
Yes.
Is there
mm-hmm.
a divide that can be bridged between the public and the private hospital care?
There's the private and the public care. We all are trained in the same universities and colleges. We all have the same knowledge. But the question is, do we have the tools to operate? You'd find that for a medical practitioner, if we had all the tools to operate within a government facility, there's no need for me to seek greener pastures in a private facility. The government facility has... we usually say we are stable. It's a stable job. When you're employed by the government, you're like, you know, you're permanent and pensionable. I don't know whether it still applies. But in the private sector, when myself who owns a hospital, it goes down. It goes down with everybody. But in the government, you'll be transferred to Pokot, so to speak, and you continue working. So it's very different divide when you look at private versus public in terms of putting this divide. The main thing is how we are going to strengthen our public facilities. Are we going to have all these tools that will enable the medical practitioners give the highest quality of standard? Yeah.
I think it's time to take a break there. Thank you very much. We'll be back.
Mix of music, 98.4 Capital.
My fellow Kenyan, we're talking about the provision of health care in our country since independence, and I'd like you to draw you on this issue of the urban versus rural. And let me be slightly edgy in saying that although healthcare is meant to be part of this service tradition, it's meant to be about helping other people to be well and to stay alive, we are moving towards a value system where it's a business to make those who can get into it rich, and who cares about the toll in lives. Is that unkind?
No, it isn't completely unkind. It is the real situation. What I've felt over 24 years that I've been in the healthcare space is that there are wide cracks, and sisi wa Kenya, we take advantage of where there's a space, and we fill that space. So the question is, for us, what are we filling this space with? We'll open hospitals that will provide this good health care. But that also now touches on the other side. Will you be able to afford this health care that I'll give you? I'll give you the best health care. That is why when my mother in the village will call me and I send to the nearest dispensary and I just hear that the doctor is not really talking things that I understand, I'll put my mother in a bus and tell her, you come to Nairobi, they are doctors. And comes all the way to Nairobi because this specialist, I'll know when I'll go to some medical plaza within Nairobi, I'll have all the specialist consultants who will diagnose and give me proper medicine. And therefore, after they give me all that breakdown, that's when we will form the WhatsApp group. We need 1 million because we need a kidney transplant, or we need to go to India because we have seen all that. But the person in the village who does not have this opportunity that I have being in Nairobi, that mama in the village whose daughter is just married in the same village or the next village, they'll just go to the dispensary and we'll end up saying that prayers is what will help us. So yes, this is a difficult thing to say, but this thing will never be the same. We will be in it just because that, yes, we need the money. We need
but
to...
There's the input of community health.
Yes.
Now, without naming names of communities and hospitals and institutions,
yes,
I know full well that here in Nairobi, at least, mm-hmm. I could go somewhere where, and let's call it a South Asian, mm-hmm. for want of a better word, mm-hmm. and they have set up hospitals and clinics, mm-hmm. where if I want the test done, mm-hmm. It ends up being perhaps as much of a third less expensive than going into the so-called big hospitals. So the idea of people taking care of themselves, mm-hmm. But allowing other people to come, mm-hmm. in the devolved government, are we, healthcare, are we going to have Kikuyu hospitals, Jaluo hospitals, Luya hospitals,
yes.
And being what we are, we head to our own people to care for us. Is that the way to deal with it? Because then maybe we'd be slightly more engaged because we're dealing with our own.
Yeah. Now, I look at it this way in terms of what is happening in healthcare. I look at it, let me just use a comparison of cars. There is a Vitz. Then you get to probably the Toyota Crown or something. Then you have a Mercedes-Benz. All these cars will get us to Nakuru, won't they? But now you know how much fuel you'll need to put into the car to get yourself to Nakuru. You'll need to know how much of the luxury will get you to Nakuru and how fast. The Vitz will take a longer time probably because the speed will not be that high. You're prone to quite a number of accidents within, and you're not going to be protected by the airbags adequately. But when you're in a Mercedes-Benz, it will be a smooth ride. You have the shock absorbers, you have everything. And that is where, unfortunately, our healthcare is. So you'll find that the Kenyan will be forced to pick an institution according to how heavy their pocket is.
Sorry, I was trying to draw the line between the idea of leveling out cost, mm-hmm. because yes. one of the preoccupations of our mm-hmm. talking to the people
yes.
is saying, "Oh my gosh, if I had a terrible disease, I'd go into complete shock."
Yes.
Is it not possible mm-hmm. to standardize mm-hmm. the cost of medical care so that through legislation, mm-hmm. you cannot sell an aspirin for more than 2 cents? Is that too much hard work?
It is very possible. It is very possible. But the institutions tagged with this, are they able to at this point?
Forgive me for talking over you.
Yes.
You're saying we're having this conversation
without
your having no expectations of your government
yes.
telling your part of the social grid
yes.
how to behave. You just do your own thing.
Now,
so there's impunity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's impunity within the healthcare system. And it's fine because everybody's doing well by it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'll tell you some of the few things. You've mentioned NHIF. For example, NHIF has made a big attempt at standardizing these costs, where we are having, like right now, you will have all tests. If a test for malaria is 100 shillings doing the lab test, NHIF will standardize it that all hospitals from level 1 to level 6 will get the same amount of money, including private hospitals. So that is an attempt at standardizing this. It is a journey that we started around in 2021, and probably if more institutions that are government-led would put in the pressure with and work together with NHIF, this might just be possible.
Since time is not on our side, I want to draw you on this idea of paying our medical practitioners, our doctors and nurses, much more money. Again, in terms of budgeting, would you encourage them to go on strike if they were to go on strike? You know, because you work there as a manager.
Mm-hmm.
Would you encourage the doctors and nurses to go on strike?
Encouraging doctors and nurses to go on strike means my mother will not get treatment. So it will eventually bite me. It will eventually bite me. Because, you know, I'm somebody who's looking at all sides of the coin. I don't want my people in the village to be affected by this. However, the question is, how are my health workers going to survive? Is it reasonable what they're asking for? As we'll go back to St. George, to King George Hospital, Kenyatta National Hospital. It had houses around it. It had everything, amenities, schools around the hospital. Are you providing this for the doctors? So when they're asking, or the healthcare workers, when they're asking for a house allowance, it's because you have not given them the house. Previously, there were houses around. So they need to go and rent out houses. So what have we put in so that we can make these people comfortable? Do we still have scholarships for master's degrees? Do we still have them? Are they easily available? And previously, they were being housed. You still do your master's and you're still paid your salary.
Right.
Is this okay now?
Time is not on our side. I'd like to address this idea again coming through the comments about medical tourism in my introduction,
mm-hmm.
where this idea, I think we read in the papers, As early as yesterday,
mm-hmm.
That our president opened up a new sort of cyber knife mm-hmm. and every that could mm-hmm. deal with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the one he very graciously launched.
Yes.
What about if we have the big diseases? You talked about kidney failure. You talked mm-hmm. about cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about the whole range of cancers that's, we don't have to go into the thing of how serious these diseases are.
Mm-hmm.
60 years on, are we ready to provide our people with the care to deal with them? Or are we still pretending that these diseases are un-African and whoever has them is cursed?
I think probably we are still at the level of being cursed by these diseases, because damn it if you don't. Because
okay.
I'm looking at it in the sense that yes, we had this the cyber knife
yes.
opened yesterday, and from what I was reading is that there are already 600 appointments. I'm like, okay, So when will they reach number 600? My head, just like that.
Right.
And this is only at Kenyatta University.
Yes.
What of Turkana? What of Kisii? We have all this. We are supposed to be having this kind of institutions in every county, because that is where a level 6 facility is supposed to be. But now we only have this one. Will it look after our 45 million population? That's the question. So, yes, for us who have the privileges, or for the people who will have the privileges, the first thing is, I can't wait for this 600. I probably will have one of the private hospitals in Nairobi is too expensive. Let me see whether I'll have the option of getting out of the country. And our first option for medical tourism is India. So we go there so that we can get this treatment. We are treated and then we come back.
Right. I think, again, there's so many things that I'd like to cover, but I'm going to go into, because you are a woman.
Yes.
And this is a territory where you'll be teaching me a thing or two. But I'd like to focus on women and women's health. Again, we're forever saying the Constitution, gender parity, our next president is going to be a woman. Are women going to be healthy enough as a group to lead our society? And what are their problems? So I'd like to stay with this for about 4 minutes, and then we're going to come back after the break. And I just want you to talk a bit about women. But do forgive me if I profess ignorance. Mm-hmm. And start by asking, what is the biggest challenge in terms of health to the however million Kenyan women? First, is it possible to say that, or you don't know?
No. A woman starts her journey at teenagehood, and we are looking at her menstruation. That is when now you realize that this is going to be a woman. Has this been addressed? Do we know how to look after ourselves? Is the public health sector looking at this in terms of what the teenage girl would do for herself?
Oh, but sorry, I want to take you back before the break. Now, are you a mother?
Yes, I am.
Are you a mother of a daughter?
Yes, I am a mother.
Okay,
of a daughter.
Before the break, I want you to tell me what you, as a mother, have done to prepare your daughter for womanhood that perhaps your own mother didn't. And whether you describe yourself as a better mother as a result.
In terms of who I am and what I've told my daughter, is there's a lot of influence that is very different from my perspective when I grew up. There's the social media and there's a lot of TV, and the children are very exposed. So we are having more open conversations than we had previously. Who's your boyfriend? You like that guy? Those are some things that we would never have talked with our mothers. So I look at it and say, sitting down with my daughter now and telling her about periods is something that is quite easy. It comes very easy. It comes when they ask you, what is this? It's a pad. What's a pad? For a woman who uses this, there are sometimes for us, we have to look at this. So these conversations are much easier now than they were previously. I look at it that because of our increased level of education, in terms of when quite a number of women have gotten at least to the primary level of education, we are able to have these discussions, despite previously where we had no education at all, and it was only the men who were educated enough and could, and therefore we were kept numb. So right now we are talking, and I believe that the woman is in a better space than we were over 60 years ago.
So sorry, I cut you short. Yes. We have maybe some 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. We got to the point, what are the other great milestones in a woman's health life?
And we are looking at pregnancy, after menstruation, pregnancy. And then afterwards, we have lost a lot of calcium from our bones, and we are also exposed to various other diseases like cervical cancer, breast cancer, that comes up afterwards. So the journey of a woman means that most of the time we are exposed to health, to the health system. We are the ones who bear the brand.
Okay, well, I think we'll have our last break. Capital FM. 19 hours, 17 minutes and 16 seconds. my fellow Kenyan, we were talking about women and healthcare. And at this stage, I'm going to permit you to lecture me a bit, a very rare thing. Tell me about it.
As I said, women are the pillar of health. A woman, as we start the menstruation and all that, you'll have that we are having such kind of abdominal pains and all that, so you already start going to hospital at that point. When you eventually get pregnant, or you're trying to get pregnant and you aren't, you have to go and seek this health care so that you can get this baby. As soon as you give birth, you have to continue with your child up until 5 years through immunizations and all that, apart from the normal colds and every other disease that gets young children. A woman therefore spends a lot of time. When our men fall sick, we try remedies in the house. And when we are defeated, we will tell you, come, I take you to the hospital. And it's the woman who will come with you to the hospital and the woman who will look after the man. So a woman is health. And when you don't strengthen the health systems around you, it is the woman who suffers the most through this. For me, I believe that a woman, when we address all the areas around health, we'll have this strong woman who does not necessarily have to come for the healthcare. We'll be looking at the preventive side. We'll be trained about the public health. We'll be able to talk to our daughters about HIV because we have learned this through the continuous medical education that occurs when we are seated at the benches and before we receive the doctor's care. So a strong health system will indicate the strong health of a woman. I'll give you a small statistic. In terms of delivery, women giving birth in hospitals, this has really improved to over 90% of women delivering in hospitals. Why? We had systems that the government started, such as Linda Mama, where even the poor of the poor did not have to pay a single coin and could manage to go to the hospitals. So we are looking that with proper policies and implementation of this, we will find that all the healthcare is well taken care of. And this woman will be able to go to universities and educate others. And the women will move from primary education to secondary education up till university level. So yes, the focus is on the woman.
May I ask you about how, may I ask you again with the focus on the woman?
Yes.
We hear about children being stunted growth, mm-hmm. or the product of their womb,
yes.
being challenged mm-hmm. by their own health.
Yes.
Now, again, would you say that this is improving, that all our children are going to sort of grow up and be mathematical geniuses because they're using their brains, which are at their full capacity? Nothing horrible has happened to them in between.
Yes, I look at it this way. When you provide proper health, especially, let's say, during pregnancy or pre-pregnancy, we have vitamins that need to be taken, calcium that needs to be taken. The doctors and the midwives will check your progress through pregnancy. We will be able to pick problems early enough and correct them. Before pregnancy, if you take folic acid, for example, there are chances that it reduces the chances of you having fetal deformities. And these are just small things and very simple, less than 10 shillings, and the mother will be okay. And the baby will be fine, will not have conditions such as spina bifida, which spina bifida is where you have the something leakage of spinal fluid through the back. You don't have this when we have picked this early, before the pregnancy or during the pregnancy. So you will have better outcome of both mother and child. And when the child is okay, it means the mother is fine. The nutrition will be looked after. The mother will be able to breastfeed for the period of 2 years that we recommend. Therefore, you have a strong baby who will not require necessarily have this nutritional conditions because the baby is fine, doesn't fall sick so many times. But look at this. You don't know all this. We don't go to hospital. We have disenfranchised workers who are not giving this health education as they're supposed to. It means that your child will end up being delayed, what we call delayed milestones, doesn't walk, doesn't talk within time, doesn't do what, because of just a simple fact of nutrition or just health talks to the mother. Therefore, this child will not even have the good start education.
You know,
yes, so you're brilliant. Your brilliance is a result of your mother.
Okay, point taken. But the other thing that I would say is that we've always been told to believe that traditionally we had our own ways and our own diets, and which took care of this. Every single African society seems to suggest that they knew how things were happening before progress came along. Your mum probably fed you uji.
Yes.
You had your beans.
Yeah.
So where I'm trying to suggest about social education,
mm-hmm.
Do we have to go for a little folic acid jab, or is it to be found in something that was in the village from time immemorial?
It can be found still in the village if we had these crops growing. But nowadays, even in the village we are buying, our crops have failed. We used to walk in the bushes and there used to be some fruits that you just eat, and they were growing naturally. Right now, how are we ensuring that, yet we are here in Nairobi or in Mombasa or in Kisumu eating bread? Where is the folic coming from?
Well, we have to end the mystery by my asking you, because it's 23 minutes. I want to talk a bit about you, but not focused on your personal life, but in your decision
mm-hmm.
to give health care to others.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about? Because it seems to be a pretty challenging profession to go into.
It is quite challenging, and one of the things that my pillar, what I am built of, is around quality. Quality is something that is I'm very passionate about it. I'd like the outcome to be good at any given time. I'd like to provide all the tools it's drugs, it's the laboratory tests, it's the doctors, it's the nursing care. It has to be at least 90% to 100% in terms of provision. I would like to have a proper ecosystem that I can control and make decisions about. Therefore, with this proper ecosystem that I've controlled, I have drugs, I have tools, I have every system is working. You're in the hospital less than 30 minutes. For me, this working system is what I aimed at when I decided to say, let me run this hospital.
You run a hospital.
Yes.
But I want to go back to how you became who you were, which is a hospital manager at this point
yes.
in your career.
Yes.
When you were going to school, did
yes.
you have a vision saying, let me look after people and run a hospital? Or what was the trigger?
No,
I'm always interested in people's triggers. What made them decide that's what I'm going to do? Because you would have known
mm-hmm.
that this would take a prodigious toll on your time.
Yes.
You'd have to be there. I'm just saying, when you were a little girl, go
yes.
back in time, nostalgia.
The interesting thing probably is just the role models. I had doctors in the family, specific doctor who was really passionate about what he did, and a nurse, my aunties. So as I looked at it, I admired them. And I said, you know, this is something that I want to be. And in our times, being a doctor was, you had to be either a doctor, an engineer, or something. So this was the something that was next for me. So after my training and I worked within the government, the frustration already started. During your internship, you're not paid. So these are things that start affecting you. And I'm talking about the year 2000 when I just left university. So as I stayed within the government, I actually was in government for about 4 years, and then it was just frustrating, and I went into the private sector, where now you see systems actually
that's telling in your
yes.
story
yes.
that you were saying, in order to pursue your passion
yes.
you had to abandon government.
Yes, because at that time when you're still young, what exactly are you going to do? Are you going to actually manage to change? Is there going to be a paradigm shift from a 23-year-old? At that point in time when I looked, I
I don't think there was any hope that I would sit on a table and discuss the way I am right now. It is because of all this 24 years at work in the health sector that probably I'm sitting opposite you.
Okay, so we go to the point where you're in management in the private sector.
Yes.
Is that more fulfilling? We're coming to the final question of, is that more fulfilling? Is this the path that you'd like everybody to go? Get the money to come to private hospitals because public hospitals will let you down. Is that the conclusion that we're going to end on?
No. The private practitioners or the private hospitals cannot manage the population that we are as a Kenyans. Still, the government has the best infrastructure. It has the land, it has the hospitals, it has the space, it has the money to put in effort into this. So I would still look at having proper healthcare systems and people being given the choices so that my mother in the village will actually get the healthcare that I am providing in Nairobi.
So, personal question.
Yes.
Will mum come to be treated in your private hospital or Kenyatta?
She'll come to my private hospital.
Oh.
Why? Mm. Because the turnaround time will be faster within my private hospital and not Kenyatta. Yes, Kenyatta will provide the treatment, but it will be very slow and painstaking.
Okay. So you are within the system, but not a believer in the system.
Yes, I'm within the system, but not necessarily a believer, until more effort is put so that we can believe in the system.
Well, it's 19 hours, 29 minutes and 17 seconds, and it's time to stop. So, do continue to give us feedback, hopefully positive and reassuring, on the Twitter handle at Capital FM Kenya, or drop us a text or WhatsApp message on 0701 984 984. I've been talking to healthcare specialist and CEO of a private hospital, Daisy Adala, and you've been listening to John Sibi Okumu on Wednesday. As ever, thank you for doing that. Much obliged. Until next time.